The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath by H.P. Lovecraft, Part 7. One starlit evening when the Pharos shone splendid over the harbor, the longed-for ship put in, and strange-faced sailors and traders appeared one by one and group by group in the ancient taverns along the sea wall. It was very exciting to see again those living faces, so like the godlike features of Ngronik. But Carter did not hasten to speak with the silent seaman. He did not know how much of pride and secrecy and dim supernal memory might fill those children of the great ones, and was sure it would not be wise to tell them of his quest, or ask too closely of that cold desert stretching north of their twilight land. They talked little with the other folk in those ancient sea taverns, but would gather in groups in remote corners and sing among themselves the haunting airs of unknown places, or chant long tales to one another in accents alien to the rest of dreamland. And so rare and moving were those airs and tales that one might guess their wonders from the faces of those who listened, even though the words came to common ears only as strange cadence and obscure melody. For a week the strange seamen lingered in the taverns and traded in the bazaars of Celephias, and before they sailed, Carter had taken passage on their dark ship, telling them that he was an old onyx miner, and wishful to work in their quarries. That ship was very lovely and cunningly wrought, being of teak wood, with ebony fittings and traceries of gold, and the cabin in which the traveller lodged had hangings of silk and velvet. One morning, at the turn of the tide, the sails were raised and the anchor lifted, and as Carter stood on the high stern, he saw the sunrise blazing walls and bronze statues and golden minarets of ageless Celephias sink into the distance, and the snowy peak of Mount Mann grow smaller and smaller. By noon there was nothing in sight save the gentle blue of the Serenarian Sea, with one painted galley afar off, bound for that realm of Serranion, where the sea meets the sky. And the night came with gorgeous stars, and the dark ship steered for Charles Wayne and the Little Bear as they swung slowly round the pole. And the sailors sang strange songs of unknown places, and they stole off one by one to the forecastle, while the wistful watchers murmured old chants and leaned over the rail to glimpse the luminous fish playing in bowers beneath the sea. Carter went to sleep at midnight and rose in the glow of a young morning, marking that the sun seemed farther south than was its wont. And all through that second day he made progress in knowing the men of the ship, getting them, little by little, to talk of their cold twilight land, of their exquisite onyx city, and of their fear of the high and impassable peaks beyond which Leng was said to be. They told him how sorry they were that no cats would stay in the land of Inquanok, and how they thought the hidden nearness of Leng was to blame for it. Only of the stony desert to the north they would not talk. There was something disquieting about that desert, and it was thought expedient not to admit its existence. On later days they talked of the quarries in which Carter said he was going to work. There were many of them, for all the city of Inquanok was builded of onyx, whilst great polished blocks of it were traded in Rinar, Ogrothon, and Celephias, and at home with the merchants of Thra, Flarnak, and Kadatharon, for the beautiful wares of those fabulous ports. and far to the north. Almost in the cold desert whose existence the men of Inquanok did not care to admit, there was an unused quarry greater than all the rest, from which had been hewn in forgotten times such prodigious lumps and blocks that the sight of their chiseled vacancies struck terror to all who beheld. Who had mined those incredible blocks, and whither they had been transported, no man might say. But it was thought best not to trouble that quarry, around which such inhuman memories might conceivably cling. So it was left all alone in the twilight, with only the raven and the rumored Shantak bird to brood on its immensities. When Carter heard of this quarry, he was moved to deep thought, for he knew from old tales that the Great One's castle atop unknown Kadath is of onyx. Each day the sun wheeled lower and lower in the sky, and the mists overhead grew thicker and thicker. And in 2 weeks there was not any sunlight at all, but only a weird gray twilight shining through a dome of eternal cloud by day, and a cold starless phosphorescence from the underside of that cloud by night. On the 20th day, a great jagged rock in the sea was sighted from afar. The first land glimpse since Mon's snowy peak had dwindled behind the ship. Carter asked the captain the name of that rock, but was told that it had no name, and had never been sought by any vessel, because of the sounds that came from it at night. And when after dark a dull and ceaseless howling arose from that jagged granite place, the traveler was glad that no stop had been made, and that the rock had no name. The seaman prayed and chanted till the noise was out of earshot, and Carter dreamed terrible dreams within dreams in the small hours. 2 mornings after that, there loomed far ahead and to the east a line of great gray peaks whose tops were lost in the changeless clouds of that twilight world. And at the sight of them the sailors sang glad songs, and some knelt down on the deck to pray, so that Carter knew they were come to the land of Inquanok, and would soon be moored to the basalt quays of the great town bearing that land's name. Toward noon a dark coastline appeared, and before 3 o'clock there stood out against the north the bulbous domes and fantastic spires of the Onyx City. Rare and curious did that archaic city rise above its walls and quays, all of delicate black, with scrolls, flutings, and arabesques of inlaid gold. Tall and many-windowed were the houses, and carved on every side with flowers and patterns whose dark symmetries dazzled the eye with a beauty more poignant than light. Some ended in swelling domes that tapered to a point, others in terraced pyramids whereon rose clustered minarets displaying every phase of strangeness and imagination. The walls were low and pierced by frequent gates, each under a great arch rising high above the general level, and capped by the head of a god, chiseled with that same skill displayed in the monstrous face on distant Ngronik. On a hill in the center rose a 16-angled tower, greater than all the rest, and bearing a high pinnacled belfry resting on a flattened dome. This, the seaman said, was the temple of the Elder Ones, and was ruled by an old high priest, sad with inner secrets. At intervals the clang of a strange bell shivered over the Onyx City, answered each time by a peal of mystic music made up of horns, viols, and chanting voices. And from a row of tripods on a gallery round the high dome of the temple There burst flares of flame at certain moments. For the priests and people of that city were wise in the primal mysteries, and faithful in keeping the rhythms of the Great Ones, as set forth in scrolls older than the Narcotic manuscripts. As the ship rode past the great basalt breakwater into the harbor, the lesser noises of the city grew manifest, and Carter saw the slaves, sailors, and merchants on the docks. The sailors and merchants were of the strange-faced race of the gods, but the slaves were squat, slant-eyed folk, said by rumor, to have drifted somehow across or around the impassable peaks from the valleys beyond Leng. The wharves reached wide outside the city wall, and bore upon them all manner of merchandise from the galleys anchored there, while at one end were great piles of onyx, both carved and uncarved, awaiting shipment to the far markets of Rinar, Ogrothon, and Celephias. It was not yet evening when the dark ship anchored beside a jutting quay of stone, and all the sailors and traders filed ashore and through the arched gate into the city. The streets of that city were paved with onyx, and some of them were wide and straight, whilst others were crooked and narrow. The houses near the water were lower than the rest, and bore above their curiously arched doorways certain signs of gold, said to be in honor of the respective small gods that favored each. The captain of the ship took Carter to an old sea tavern where flocked the mariners of quaint countries, and promised that he would next day show him the wonders of the Twilight City, and lead him to the taverns of the onyx miners by the northern wall. And evening fell, and little bronze lamps were lighted, and the sailors in that tavern sang songs of remote places. But when from its high tower the great bell shivered over the city, and the peal of horns and viols and voices rose cryptical in answer thereto, all ceased their songs or tales, and bowed silent till the last echo died away. For there is a wonder and a strangeness on the twilight city of Inquanok, and men fear to be lax in its rites, lest a doom and a vengeance lurk unsuspectedly close. Far in the shadows of that tavern, Carter saw a squat form he did not like, for it was unmistakably that of the old slant-eyed merchant he had seen so long before in the taverns of Dailath Lean, who was reputed to treat trade with the horrible stone villages of Leng, which no healthy folk visit, and whose evil fires are seen at night from afar, and even to have dealt with that high priest not to be described, who wears a yellow silken mask over its face, and dwells all alone in a prehistoric stone monastery. This man had seemed to show a queer gleam of knowing when Carter asked the traders of Dailath Lean about the Cold Waste and Kadath, and somehow his presence in dark and haunted Inquanok, so close to the wonders of the north, was not a reassuring thing. He slipped wholly out of sight before Carter could speak to him, and sailors later said that he had come with a yak caravan from some point not well determined, bearing the colossal and rich-flavored eggs of the rumored Shantok bird, to trade for the dexterous jade goblets that merchants brought from Ilarnek. On the following morning, the ship captain led Carter through the onyx streets of Inquanok, dark under their twilight sky. The inlaid doors and figured house fronts, carven balconies and crystal-paned oriels, all gleamed with a somber and polished loveliness, and now and then a plaza would open out with black pillars, colonnades, and the statues of curious beings, both human and fabulous. some of the vistas down long and unbending streets, or through side alleys, or over bulbous domes, spires, and arabesqued roofs, were weird and beautiful beyond words. And nothing was more splendid than the massive heights of the great central temple of the Elder Ones, with its 16 carved sides, its flattened dome, and its lofty pinnacled belfry, overtopping all else, and majestic whatever its foreground. And always to the east, far beyond the city walls and the leagues of pasture-land, rose the gaunt gray sides of those topless and impassable peaks across which hideous Leng is said to lie. The captain took Carter to the mighty temple, which is set with its walled garden in a great round plaza, whence the streets go as spokes from a wheel's hub. The seven arched gates of that garden, each having over it a carven face like those on the city's gates, are always open. And the people roam reverently at will down the tiled paths and through the little lanes lined with grotesque termini and the shrines of modest gods. And there are fountains, pools, and basins there to reflect the frequent blaze of the tripods on the high balcony, all of onyx, and having in them small luminous fish taken by divers from the lower bowers of ocean. When the deep clang from the temple belfry shivers over the garden and the city, and the answer of the horns and viols and voices peals out from the seven lodges by the garden gates, there issue from the seven doors of the temple long columns of masked and hooded priests in black, bearing at arm's length before them great golden bowls from which a curious steam rises. And all the seven columns strut peculiarly in single file, legs thrown far forward without bending the knees, down the walks that lead to the seven lodges, wherein they disappear and do not appear again. It is said that subterranean paths connect the lodges with the temple, and that the long files of priests return through them. Nor is it unwhispered that deep flights of onyx steps go down to mysteries that are never told. But only a few are those who hint that the priests in the masked and hooded columns are not human beings. Carter did not enter the temple, because none but the veiled king is permitted to do that. But before he left the garden, the hour of the bell came, and he heard the shivering clang deafening above him, and the wailing of the horns and viols and voices loud from the lodges by the gates. And down the seven great walks stalked the long lines of bowl-bearing priests in their singular way, giving to the traveler a fear which human priests do not often give. When the last of them had vanished, he left that garden, noting as he did so a spot on the pavement over which the bowls had passed. Even the ship captain did not like that spot, and hurried him on toward the hill whereon the veiled king's palace rises, many-domed and marvelous. The ways to the Onyx Palace are steep and narrow, all but the broad curving one where the king and his companions ride on yaks or in yak-drawn chariots. Carter and his guide climbed up an alley that was all steps, between inlaid walls bearing strange signs in gold, and under balconies and oriels whence sometimes floated soft strains of music or breaths of exotic fragrance. Always ahead loomed those titan walls, mighty buttresses, and clustered and bulbous domes for which the veiled king's palace is famous. And at length they passed under a great black arch and emerged in the gardens of the monarch's pleasure. There Carter paused in faintness at so much beauty, for the onyx terraces and colonnaded walks, the gay portieres, and the delicate flowering trees espaliered to golden lattices, the brazen urns and tripods with cunning bas-reliefs, the pedestaled and almost breathing statues of veined black marble, the basalt-bottomed lagoons, tiled fountains with luminous fish, the tiny temples of iridescent singing birds atop carven columns, the marvelous scrollwork of the great bronze gates, and the blossoming vines trained along every inch of the polished walls, all joined to form a sight whose loveliness was beyond reality, and half fabulous even in the land of dreams. There it shimmered like a vision under that gray twilight sky, with the domed and fretted magnificence of the palace ahead, and the fantastic silhouette of the distant impassable peaks on the right. And ever the small birds and the fountains sang, while the perfume of rare blossoms spread like a veil over that incredible garden. No other human presence was there, and Carter was glad it was so. Then they turned and descended again the onyx alley of steps, for the palace itself no visitor may enter, and it is not well to look too long and steadily at the great central dome, since it is said to house the archaic father of all the rumored Shantok birds, and to send out queer dreams to the curious. After that, the captain took Carter to the north quarter of the town, near the gate of the caravans, where are the taverns of the yak merchants and the onyx miners. And there, in a low-ceiled N of quarrymen, they said farewell, for business called the captain, whilst Carter was eager to talk with miners about the north. There were many men in that inn, and the traveller was not long in speaking to some of them, saying that he was an old miner of onyx, and anxious to know somewhat of Inquanox quarries. But all that he learned was not much more than he knew before, for the miners were timid and evasive about the cold desert to the north, and the quarry that no man visits. They had fears of fabled emissaries from around the mountains where Leng is said to lie, and of evil presences and nameless sentinels far north among the scattered rocks. And they whispered also that the rumored Shantok birds are no wholesome things, it being indeed for the best that no man has ever truly seen one, for that fabled father of Shantoks in the king's dome is fed in the dark. The next day, saying that he wished to look over all the various mines for himself, and to visit the scattered farms and quaint onyx villages of Inquanok, Carter hired a yak, and stuffed great leathern saddlebags for a journey. Beyond the gate of the caravans the road lay straight betwixt tilled fields, with many odd farmhouses crowned by low domes. At some of these houses the seeker stopped to ask questions. Once finding a host so austere and reticent, and so full of an unplaced majesty like to that in the huge features on Ngronek, that he felt certain he had come at last upon one of the great ones themselves, or upon one with full 9/10 of their blood dwelling amongst men. And to that austere and reticent Cotter he was careful to speak very well of the gods, and to praise all the blessings they had ever accorded him. End of Part 7.